Welcome to Today's Issues. Join us for the next hour as we offer a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome to Today's Issues. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman today. I am joined in studio by Walker Wildman, AFA Vice President of Operations. Walker, good morning.
Good morning, Ed. Glad to have you back.
Well, it's good to be back. I was, let me introduce Fred Jackson, News Director for American Family News and One News Now. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning. Great to be here. And I'm surprised I have Walker sitting on my left here.
Yes. Every day that goes by, I'm surprised too.
Yes. We're talking about the what we have been calling the soon coming Walker twins, but like, I don't know if it's soon coming or not.
People are going to think I'm just lying, like I'm not expecting kids, and I like the boy that cried wolf.
You're getting all this sympathy for, you know, and the excitement and congratulations about the twins, and you just get 2 years later, people go, "Hey, did you ever have your twins?" No, they're still waiting.
My wife is a champ. I mean, she is carrying two nearly 8-pound boys.
Yes.
Nearly eight. I've never heard of this. She's carrying 16 pounds of boy, and she's 5'2".
Yes.
So she is a trooper, and she's ready to deliver them, but they're healthy and big and hanging in there.
Well, praise the Lord. Yeah, and we all kind of thought last week was going to be the week. But it's
yeah.
I'm sure your wife's saying, "Yeah, you're not the only one."
Yeah.
But I was out this past weekend. I got an opportunity to go with my dad on one of these honor flights for veterans. It was a group of 25 veterans. Each one has a guardian. I was my dad's guardian, so carried his backpack. And when he got tired, all the veterans had wheelchairs. You know, my dad's almost 90. The oldest one on the trip was a World War II vet who was 3 days away from 101.
Wow.
So we went to D.C. It was an all-day, you know, we were up for 36 straight hours, and just because of the travel schedule, leaving at 1 o'clock in the morning, and a couple of flights, and then a bus ride from Baltimore into D.C., and then all day going to the different monuments. But this was the Space Coast Honor Vets
Honor Flight from Florida.
Right. We left out of Melbourne, Florida. And, man, this whole staff, I mean, I was blown away. Now, I'll show it around the office. At some point, I'll get a DVD. They have a photographer on the on the flight. And the thing I was the most blown away by was in the airports in Orlando and Baltimore. People volunteer and they come out to applaud these veterans when they get off the plane. And now when we get off the plane, all the veterans have to be in a wheelchair just simply because we have to get from point A to point B, you know, relatively quickly. And there were just, I don't know, in some places over 100 people. Hmm. And then in these airports, they're used to these flights. So people just stop and just applaud the veterans, shake their hands. It was really a great experience for the veterans, and of course I was proud of my dad and proud of all those men. There was one woman there, a veteran from the Vietnam War, and so I was out yesterday recuperating from that after getting back Sunday night, and so it was a wonderful experience. And they have hundreds of these groups across the country, so if you want to get involved in volunteering to honor veterans on these kinds of flights, you can find out more about them. So
it's such a great story, an encouraging story. So much negativity out there,
right?
And we have to report those stories,
sure.
But that's a story that needs to be featured more and more.
And I'm going to write an article about the trip and about my dad, mostly about my dad for the AFA Journal. I don't know when I'll finish that. It'll, you know, whether it'll be probably around July.
Did you get much media coverage? I mean, when you were in D.C. on the weekend, were there television stations came out to cover these guys?
Because they do these fairly often. So it's I don't say it's run of the mill, but I'm sure they have local stations probably have covered these things on occasion, but not this one particular flight. Yeah. So anyway, we went to different monuments and the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. We watched the changing of the guard there, and it was just a great trip.
Great. Super.
Glad to be a part of that. All right.
You bet.
Well, let's get to the news, Fred, the news of the day.
All right. The headline yesterday on this story was, "Justices reject Christian bed and breakfast owner who denied room to lesbian couple." U.S. Supreme Court yesterday left in place Hawaii court rulings that found a Christian bed and breakfast owner violated the state's anti-discrimination law by refusing to rent a room to a lesbian couple. Phyllis Young is the lady who owns this bed and breakfast. It's called Aloha Bed and Breakfast, Hawaii, imagine that, who argued that she should be allowed to turn away homosexuals because of her religious beliefs. In other words, she didn't want them sharing a bedroom in the place. It's her house, too.
It's her house.
It's not one of these strip motels or that right. kind of thing. It's her house. But the justices upheld the lower court rulings in Hawaii that said that she was in violation of the state's anti-discrimination laws. Now, when I first looked at this, I said, now, wait a minute. This is the same U.S. Supreme Court that just not too long ago ruled in favor of Jack Phillips, the gentleman from Colorado.
Right, Baker.
The Baker from Colorado. Of course, the situation is different. And Ed, we were talking about this at our story meeting this morning, that in the Phillips case, it was a case of First Amendment rights expression.
Right.
And because we're trying to figure, okay, what's the difference? How can the same court rule such different ways? But in the Jack Phillips case, it was First Amendment rights, but also particularly the way that Jack Phillips was treated by the Human Rights Commission
right.
there in Colorado. In this case, the First Amendment right apparently is not an argument that can be put on the table in the case of Phyllis Young and her bed and breakfast. It's a case of this: you are offering up your house as accommodations to the public,
right.
a bed and breakfast place. And therefore, she didn't have the same strength of argument that Jack Phillips and Bernold Stutzman and others have been making, in the way that a cake is a creation, an artist's creation. A bouquet of flowers is an artist's creation, a
right.
First Amendment expression. But I still think it's unfair.
Well, and this is especially because, and of course I agree with what we're talking about. We talked about this in the story meeting, that there are differences between the Aloha case, this bed and breakfast, and Jack Phillips. However, this is troubling, and it's troubling because of the underlying reasons why states and courts are ruling against things like bed and breakfast, because this is not the first bed and breakfast to get this kind of decision. It's especially troubling because this is the Christian's home. However, if you're going to use your home and open it up to, you know, for business, you do have to follow the relevant laws. You can't say, for example, I'm not serving black people. Okay. Now, here's the thing that's troubling, is that the reason that this couple is lost in this court case is because our society increasingly has accepted the argument that sexual orientation and race are the same thing. Mm. See, if this bed and breakfast said, listen, only married couples allowed, we do not believe in renting a room to anyone who's not married, who will be basically shacking up in our home. I think you can get away with that, except that homosexuality has been put in a special category.
Mm-hmm.
This is not an issue of morality. This is an issue of legal standing.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the tragic mistake our country has made. And Walker, this kind of thing is the reason why bed and breakfast and many other kinds of businesses are going to lose, because we've accepted this argument. It's bogus.
Yeah, and the only way to combat this is to have at the state level have the legislators pass laws that say, unless you're protected by the federal civil rights laws, which is the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and a couple other laws, unless you're protected by those, which would be skin color, which would be sex,
disability,
you know, age, things like that. States could pass laws that say no locality can create special protections unless they're covered in this Civil Rights Act of 1964. But what we've seen is states haven't done that, like Hawaii, and even they've done the opposite. They've carved out special protections for different people who engage in different sexual activity, which is a huge problem. But as far as the legality goes, this is why, as you say often, Ed, elections have consequences. And when you elect lefties and Democrats to run your state, then Christians are going to come under persecution, and oftentimes it's, quote, legal.
Because the Democratic Party is increasingly anti-Christian,
yes,
and anti-God. They don't care about your Christian faith because they dislike it. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say they all hate it. They dislike it, and they would prefer that it be shoved to the margins of society.
And this is a really good point to bring in at with regards to this story, is that Democrats do want to increase the power of the homosexual activists to go and do whatever they want and to punish Christians.
Right. Yeah.
They want the Equality Act.
Yes, which that would, to Walker's point, that
it would federalize.
It would federalize this protection for for sexual orientation and gender identity.
Yes, and in this case, one example that we could bring out, if this Equality Act was to pass, one of the things that might happen is that, let's say you have a construction company, you're a Christian,
right,
and you own a construction company, and you want to bid on federal contracts.
Yes.
You know, the federal government is going to build an office building in your town. You're a Christian contractor. Well, if the Democrats get their way, you're not even going to be allowed to bid on that contract because you have stated in your town that you're a Christian and you stand against homosexuality.
And the Obama administration was doing this on a smaller scale.
Yes, they were.
In a few cases, where they were changing the federal qualifications, which is an executive branch. Congress has given the executive branch the authority to change, you know, who qualifies for what federal grants. That's, the Trump administration has taken advantage of that in a good way. But this is what's so frightening, and I mean that seriously, about the Democrats and them getting in control, is they will, no doubt, this Equality Act, the so-called Equality Act, is a top priority for the left.
Right.
And they will, if they get control of both chambers of Congress and the White House, they will, that will be a top priority to pass. And so we're, you know, we're one administration, one election away from having these policies federalized to where conservative states like Texas and Mississippi could be battling, Christians could be battling for their businesses.
And that is not an overstatement.
No.
That is exactly, we are one election away. Just to show you the kind of power that the federal government can wield, President Barack Obama threatened states, remember, states' school systems,
yes,
that you will allow transgenders to use the bathroom and changing areas, locker rooms of their choice, or you lose federal money for education.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the threat that was put out there. I think it's staggeringly contradictory in terms of the ideology of the LGBTQ RST movement, is they will argue that you can't change your sexual orientation. You're born gay, but you can change your gender. I don't know how they don't see the self-contradictory
nature
of that.
To me, those two are basically the same thing.
I mean, you're telling me I can say I was born a male, but I am deciding that I'm actually female. I'm changing my gender, but you can't change your sexual orientation.
The way they've been able to get away with that is you cannot question them.
Right.
You cannot question their line of thinking, otherwise
you're a bigot. Yes.
Exactly. And there was even a movement within this whole sexual deviancy, quote, community. There was a fight, a battle against transgenders joining the LGBT.
Yes.
T, adding the T to the LGBT because it does contradict.
Yeah,
the line of thinking does not work together.
Right. So
no, it's isn't it amazing, Ed? And you and I have been doing these programs now for what, 20 years? But I remember when this was all started, and Walker, we were beyond the air with your granddad doing AFA report.
Yeah, that was
that
years
time.
Ago.
We were remarking how amazing it was, the political power that 2 to 3% of the population.
It's really, it's under 2%. If you add bisexuals, it goes up some.
But that portion, that tiny yes. portion of the population has become a rudder for the whole culture.
Yeah.
Yes.
Deciding, you know, who's right and wrong and defining what bullying is now.
Right.
If you disagree with them, you're a bully. Mm-hmm. It just by simply stating, I hold to a biblical view on homosexuality. You're a bully.
Yeah.
You're a problem. We got to get you out of here.
Well, the reason it is so powerful is it falls in with the spirit of the age.
Yeah.
So you have many heterosexuals who want to keep their porn. They want to keep their own sexual deviancy. And they realize that if they go with a biblical standard or even a traditional morality in terms of homosexuality, that standard's going to come back and bite their behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they have to say, listen, I think everyone should be able to do what they want, which is why the transgender movement is gaining so much steam, is because our society says you should be able to do whatever you want. So that means if this man wants to declare himself a woman, he should have the right, because you know what? I want to have the right to do whatever I want to do.
Yeah.
And that's why this movement has gained so much power, is because it falls right in line with the thinking of so many other Americans who are outside the LGBT community.
Yeah, and I would even say that that's crept into the Christian church in America, mm-hmm. and that is, where do we draw the line on immorality?
Right.
Because, you know, because if you want to delve into fornication and adultery, then we've got to, because if you're going to go after homosexuals,
right,
then you've got to enforce that across the board. And I agree with that. But pastors and other church leaders may think that's a tough row, you know, to hoe, so to speak, because you are going to have to crack down on people who are sleeping with their girlfriend before they're married and things like that.
Right.
Well, we're now in second or third generation, I think, of what I call the propaganda of the left, the propaganda of Satan's crowd influencing our young people. And we're just seeing, and we do, you know, surveys after surveys after surveys of showing the younger people coming through our education system today, they're abandoning Christian principles. I mean, today it's tolerance, but tolerance only for what I deem is right, you know, because we're going to be more and more intolerant towards Christians. And we're seeing that demonstrated certainly in the political realm when it comes to what's going on in the Democratic Party right now, that the new stars on the block are people like AOC and
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. It's a long name, so everyone's taken to calling her AOC.
AOC. Well, it's really interesting. Campus Reform, which is just an incredible group, they go on campuses around the country. And they do surveys, kind of what we used to call man in the streets. That's probably not politically correct anymore. Person on the streets now on campus. And they ask kids where they stand on the issues. And recently, Cabot Phillips of Campus Reform went to Georgetown University and started asking the kids, okay, who do you think is the face of the Democratic Party? Is it almost 80-year-old Nancy Pelosi or is it AOC? I want you to have a listen of what a lot of these kids had to say. Cut number two.
In your opinion, who would you view as the face of the party?
I would probably choose Cortez, just because she's new, she's fresh, yeah.
I would say AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
I think, unfortunately, Ocasio-Cortez is probably the face of the Democratic Party.
I think AOC is taking the party in a new direction, so.
She's changing the face of the party, and I think that as the millennial base participates more in politics, and as my age group participates more, there's going to be a lot more people steering that direction, steering in a more democratic socialist direction.
I think it's AOC. I sort of wish it weren't, but I do think we're going in that direction.
Ocasio-Cortez, an up-and-coming figure in the Democratic Party, but if there's somebody who still holds the reins, it's got to be Nancy Pelosi.
I definitely need to educate myself more, but maybe Pelosi as of now.
I have to say Nancy Pelosi. I think she represents more. I think that Ocasio-Cortez is a little bit just too extreme to the left.
But the vast majority kind of think AOC is the future of the Democratic Party. And that goes to the divide within the Democratic Party right now, what we're looking at. But by far, those who have declared, is it 12 now? I think it's 12 that have actually declared.
Yeah.
Everybody's waiting on Joe Biden. Could happen next month, folks.
Yeah.
But for the most part, those who have declared so far are all far to the left. And they're appealing to these kids that you just heard, that believe AOC is the future of the Democratic Party, or the way that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez thinks and her principles, you know, everything free, Green New Deal, the whole thing. They really buy into that. I don't know if you heard that one young lady on there t- talking about democratic socialism,
yeah,
I think is the phrase that she used. Well, this comes as a result of, now they're in university, but through, you know, public schools and on into university now, they have been indoctrinated on this kind of thing. So it's a real interesting political dynamic, and the time that we are in right now, it's absolutely amazing the transition we're seeing in this country.
And AOC is a freshman Democrat in the House.
Yes.
I mean, she just got elected in November.
29 years old?
I think 29 years old, and to say she is the face of the Democratic Party is extraordinary.
Yeah.
Because she is. Now, that was part of what some of these young people who were being kind of man on the street interviews there were saying, was that, well, she's new, she's got fresh ideas.
Yeah.
She doesn't really have fresh ideas. I mean, Bernie Sanders was talking, he's an avowed socialist, has been an avowed socialist for many years from Vermont. But there are young people coming into the Democratic Party who not only have those kinds of socialist ideas, but they're unwilling to compromise, Walker, and that's the problem for the Democratic Party, is while Nancy Pelosi, for now, holds the technical reins of power, these young people coming in, they have no mind to compromise. They want the full buffet of socialist ideas to run the party.
Yeah, and Democrats have clamped down so much on free speech that you can't even question them, even within their own party. So you have people... You have Democrats who question Cortez on some of her ideas and how she's going to pay for it, and then she just says, "You're just trying to be nitpicking, and you're not, and I'm just trying to solve problems, and all you're doing is criticizing." So she shuts down debate,
and she says, "We're making a list."
Yeah,
she and others are saying we're making a list of people who aren't on board with the Green New Deal and others, and the implication is we'll primary you.
Yeah, and so you can't even. You can't even question her, because then she accuses you of being a bigot or being, you know, against her ideas and things like that. So it's a dangerous, and the Democrats are having to deal with this within their own party.
Well, what's really interesting, you heard a few of the kids there that aren't buying into
this.
It would be interesting to question them a little bit further as to where they get their worldview.
Right.
Because a few of them obviously are going and getting their information beyond Facebook.
Right.
They're thinking about this a little bit. Maybe mom and dad have kind of introduced them to the real world
to Venezuela.
that's right.
Let me introduce you to.
Have a look at Venezuela. Yeah. But also, hey, there's things that arrive in the mail. They're called bills, which we have to pay, or they turn off the power and do all kinds of things like that's the real world, kids. Not everything is free, kids. So, you know. And I think that's such a responsibility, and we have parents that are listening to us right now. You got to start educating your kids and kind of insulating them against this kind of free-for-all thinking that's out there today, that, you know, go ahead, demand everything from the government. It's all free, and you're entitled to it.
Well, I mentioned before the show started, I read an article about Chinese Americans, and especially those who have immigrated to the United States in the last 10 years from communist China.
Yeah.
And they're going, what in the world is going on with the Democratic Party? We left all that. The article also points out that there are those in the United States from formerly communist countries, from Eastern Europe, some of these kinds of places where they've lived under socialism. And they're going, listen, reality's a brutal teacher. You may think in the white ivory tower of your college classroom that this is a good idea, but it doesn't operate that way in the real world.
Yeah.
All right. Well, of course, we'll be talking about socialism from now until the election, because that is apparently what the election's going to be about. Mm-hmm. We're going to take a couple of minutes break. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. We're going to have Sandy Rios on after the break. You don't want to miss that. We'll be back in a couple minutes. Please join us.
Next time on Today's Issues, we'll talk with Janet Mefford.
I think the pastors, most of them, are scared to death. I don't want to get death threats. I don't want to be screamed at. I don't want to be complained about. I don't want to be raked over the coals. You know what? there comes a time in history where the Christian just has to stand.
We'll also have news headlines and analysis from American Family News. Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
On the first day of the week, very early in the morning, we took the spices that we'd prepared and we went into the tomb. We found the stone rolled away from the tomb. When we went in, we didn't find the body of our Lord Jesus.
Who took him?
Where is he?
Who took him?
Why do you look for the living among the dead?
Where's Jesus?
He's not here. He has risen.
Jesus was alive. He's alive.
Jesus was betrayed, abandoned, mocked, beaten, and then crucified on a cross for sinners like you and me. The Son of God was buried, and after 3 days, he rose from that grave. American Family Radio encourages you to rejoice in the glorious reality that our God is a living God.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
Hello, Americans. Converting to Islam. That story next. Hi, this is Todd Starnes from Fox News, and one of the things I love about Liberty University is the broad vision they have for their students. Instead of simply preparing them for a career, Liberty helps students grow into mature men and women of character, striving to impact their career fields for Christ. Liberty University is the largest Christian university in the world, offering more than 550 programs of study. Visit liberty.edu to learn more. Again, that's liberty.edu. Mark McLaughlin was a bit disturbed when his stepdaughter came home from school the other day talking about the Prophet Muhammad. The 12-year-old went on to say Islam is the religion of peace and how they should eat halal meat. Mr. McLaughlin, who lives in Sunderland, England, says he became especially concerned when he saw his stepdaughter's homework assignment. She had been instructed by her public school to write a letter to her family about converting to Islam. Mr. McLaughlin forbade his daughter from writing that letter, then posted the homework assignment on social media. He accused the school of trying to brainwash his child. But instead of finding support, the McLaughlin family received lots of hate mail. He's been called a racist and a bigot. Whatever happened to teaching kids about reading, writing, and arithmetic? I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News commentary.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And welcome back. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman today. I'm joined in studio by Walker Wildman and Fred Jackson. Walker, we have coming up in the middle of April, we have Share-a-thon. What are we asking some of our listeners to do?
Yeah, if you want to, if you listen to American Family Radio and you support our ministry here, and for some reason AFR has impacted your life, maybe the Bible teaching or the different shows during the daytime, 8 to 5, then you can call in and share your listener testimony about how American Family Radio has impacted your life. Here's the number to call in. And then it'll be a voicemail system, so you'll leave a voicemail about a minute or two, if you can, of your listener testimony. The number to call in and share your testimony is 877-876-8893. That's 877-876-8893. Call in, share your testimony. And if for some reason you didn't get that, we'll mention it again before the end of the show.
And we do, you may hear your testimony on the air in the lead up to Share-a-thon or during Share-a-thon. Hmm. I always love to hear those listener testimonies because it lets us know we're having an impact in people's lives, and that's what we're called to do. So it's always good to hear back, and people have some of the most amazing testimonies about what AFR programming has meant to them. All right. As Walker said, we will mention that again later on in the program. Anytime you're listening here for the next several weeks on AFR, you will hear this this plea for listener testimonies, and you'll get the information on a consistent basis here over the next couple of weeks. Well, Sandy Rios is AFA Director of Governmental Affairs. She's host of Sandy Rios in the Morning, which is heard on AFR Talk each weekday morning from 7:05 to 8 a.m. Central Time. She is a favorite on American Family Radio. Sandy, welcome to Today's Issues.
Thank you, Ed. You always make me smile. You're really sweet when you introduce me.
I make the world smile, Sandy. That's my calling in
life.
Now,
wait a minute. That means you didn't mean it. No, I'm not smiling.
No. You're one of our rock stars on American Family Radio. And I listen to you on the way in. And then when you go to a break or, you know, have a story that I'm pretty familiar with, I'll go over to airing the Addisons. I'll flip back and forth, but I do learn a lot on your program, so I'm not alone in that.
Thank you.
So, all right, Fred, we had a couple of stories picked out to kind of toss Sandy's way. What's first on your list?
Well, I was at the gym last night, and they have a whole bank of TV screens up there.
Yeah.
You can watch whatever one you want. This particular gym I go to has CNN on three or four of these things. It's the only
you need
time
to change gyms.
The only time I watch CNN. But last night, this is no kidding, folks. They spent 15 minutes on George Conway.
Now, who is that?
Well, you probably know his wife a whole lot better than you know him. His wife is Kellyanne Conway.
Right. An advisor.
One of President Trump's closest advisors. But George Conway on the mainstream media has been getting a whole lot of attention, like CNN last night, 50, because he's out there declaring that basically President Trump is mentally unstable.
Yes.
And wow, you would think that he's the voice of God. Like, yeah. George Conway feels this way, therefore, according to CNN and George Conway, it must be true. So what's going on here? And I mean, Sandy, I don't know what it's like in the household, the Conway household. And they have three or four kids, Kellyanne Conway and her husband, George Conway. But he's out there making these remarks about his wife's boss.
Yeah.
Ongoing. And, of course, the mainstream media just absolutely loves it and giving him all kinds of credibility. By the way, he's not a psychiatrist, folks.
Right.
He's just making these comments. I'm sure you've heard about all this, Sandy.
Yes, I have. Yes, I did hear about that. I've said something about it, but not as much about George as I wish I could and had. So you've given me a chance to do this. I don't really, look, let me give a little background, at least what I do know. Kellyanne and George lived in a beautiful home, very successful, both of them, in New York State. And they have, several children devoted to their kids. Kellyanne certainly is. It was hard for her to give up her life and move to Washington and start working for Donald Trump. And, you know, before that, she was heading his campaign, so it was all consuming. And then for her husband, who was a very successful attorney in New York, to give up his job and move to D.C. was not a small thing. So that's kind of the background. Kellyanne is really a devoted wife and mother. Honestly, I've seen that firsthand. Family means so much to Kellyanne. And so this has not been without stress. I don't know if that's feeding into this or not, but the things that I do know is that George Conway is affiliated with some people. I'm not saying George is being paid, but I know that people he runs with are being paid by a gentleman named Omidyar. His last name is Omidyar. It's Pierre Omidyar. He's the founder of eBay. He is one of these multi-billionaire never-Trumpers like George Soros and Tom Steyer. They run in the same circles. And Omidyar has spent, I don't know how much money, I'd have to conjure that up in my brain, but lots of money, funding never-Trumpers and funding the pro-Robert Mueller branch of the never-Trumpers, talking about funding op-eds, all kinds of people to write about how wonderful, stellar Robert Mueller is and how the investigation must continue and no one must stop him because he's the white knight and he's going to get to the bottom of things. So Omidyar has been doing that, but at the same time, he's been funding never Trumpers who say terrible things about President Trump. And one of those is Bill Kristol. And we know for a fact that Bill has gotten several million dollars. Let me just, trying to find this as we're talking. So Bill, of course, is the founder of Weekly Standard, which is now defunct. But Omidyar's funds gave $600,000 to another outlet that Bill Kristol created to work on behalf of Bob Mueller. It was called Defending Democracy Together. Another person involved with Omid Yar and his money is Charlie Sykes. Charlie was a radio talk show host in Milwaukee that I used to really like, and I remember when he went off the rails against Donald Trump, and I couldn't quite understand that. He just became irrationally critical. So Charlie's on this list, and he works with him. He's actually on staff with this entity. And then you read down further, and you see that Amona Charon is part of this. And you probably noticed that Bill Kristol and George Conway said basically the same thing this week. Bill Kristol said the same thing about President Trump being, it's getting worse, he's mentally unhinged. I actually almost played that clip on my show this morning. George Conway is saying pretty much the same thing Bill Kristol is saying, and we know that this is what we do know. George Conway is linked to a guy named Paul Rosenzweig, who is a senior fellow at, this is really confusing. If you're listening on radio, it's bad enough when you're trying to read it. But what the left does is they fund a ton of organizations, and they all have different names, and they all sound great. But they're linked together, and it takes an entomologist, you know, to work out the, you know, which species goes where. But R Street is another construct of this Omid Yar, and of what's called, he calls it the Democracy Fund. See what I mean? It's very confusing. And so R Street is an entity of that. And a senior fellow of our street is Paul Rosenzweig. And Paul Rosenzweig and George Conway together joined each other in another organization of lawyers. I don't have the name of that particular group, but opposed to the president. So George Conway is affiliated, at least at the very least, loosely, with this Omid Yar character. In fact, they wrote a, you may remember, Fred, a few, I don't know, may have been a year ago now, that they wrote a statement, and George Conway signed on to it. It says, "We are a group of attorneys who would traditionally be considered conservative or libertarian. We believe in the rule of law, the power of truth, blah, blah, blah. We believe in the Constitution." And it's signed by several people, including George. And then they go on to just shred Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. So this is another entity of Tom Ridge is part of that, the former governor of Pennsylvania, who under his watch Kermit Gosnell flourished in his abortion clinic, I might add. But Tom Ridge was Homeland Security under Bush. So you see, was that clear at all, or did I just throw too much stuff at this?
No, I mean, funny, CNN didn't mention any of this last night in their program.
Yeah,
I had no idea that people like Mona Charon and now Bill Kristol, I knew was a never-Trumper, but I didn't know that he was getting, or Charlie Sykes. I remember Charlie Sykes. I had no idea that these folks were getting money from this. What's his name? The eBay founder?
His name is Pierre Omid Yar. Omidyar. Let me refer you guys and our listeners to an article, which will spell out more than I just said. It's American Greatness is the entity, the outlet, and it's called No Collusion. Omid Yar, Omidyar dash backed Never Trumpers hardest hit. Omid Yar backed Trumpers, Never Trumpers hardest hit.
Well, you know, when they say follow the money, I mean, I know that I understand that, you know, Weekly Standard and others, you know, kind of outlets, you got to get money from somewhere. I understand. Yeah. And then they ultimately failed. That's why they went out of business. But it is important that if you want to be taken seriously as a journalistic endeavor or a journalist, you've got to have integrity. And if you're being funded by someone with a particular who is not just doesn't just have a particular viewpoint, but is spending his money to promote a particular viewpoint, you're going to lose whatever integrity, sense of integrity that and faith that people have in you, Walker. Yeah. I mean, that's just the way it is.
And Sandy, this also jumps into George Conway's character in the sense that he spends his time on Twitter every day, and President Trump does the same thing, but he spends his time bashing his wife's boss.
Oh,
and,
I
and
know.
You would just
this
think
is, this is what the British
of course,
call bad
when,
form.
When your wife comes home, you go, yeah, you know, I just didn't like what Trump did today, yada yada yada. But George Conway goes out of his way to go public every day and bash Trump when he could just wait until the Trump administration's over,
right,
and then write a little book about how he disliked Trump. But instead, they accuse Trump of being low class and sleazy. They're all low class and sleazy. You know, it's like they have no moral standing because they do the same thing.
And you'd think he would be proud of his wife. And, and can you imagine the despair he's heaping on her?
Yeah.
And publicly. Yeah. It's just, even James Carville and his wife never did that. And you can bet they had some wars, private wars at home. We know they did. But they presented a united front. They loved and respected. It's lack of respect for his wife.
It's got to be humiliating to her. I mean, this man is humiliating her because he's implying that his wife doesn't have enough smarts to work for someone who's not mentally ill. I don't understand. Like Walker said, and we talked about this in our story meeting, this is, you're acting like a jerk if you publicly humiliate your wife by going after her boss. You should be supportive enough of her and what she's trying to do and say, I may not believe in your boss, but I believe in you. And I, like Walker said, I'll write my book later on, as if anyone cares what George Conway really has to say. But it's bad form.
Yeah. And, you know what? Let me just read you guys. You probably saw it. This just came into my inbox anyway. Brad Parscale, whose name's familiar, but I can't remember who he is. He's tweeting. He says, we all know that Donald Trump turned down Mr. Kellyanne Conway for a job he desperately wanted. He barely worked at the Justice Department and was either fired or quit. Didn't want the scrutiny? Now he hurts his wife because he is jealous of her success. POTUS doesn't even know him.
Yeah.
So that's what Brad Parscale is saying, whoever he is. So.
Yeah.
Boy, I tell you what, Sandy, thank you for the rest of the story.
Yes, I didn't know that.
I've been trying to figure out why is so much attention paid to who's George Conway?
Right.
Yeah.
But
now
we know who he's connected with.
Yep.
Yeah.
Big money.
Man.
Big anti-Trump money.
Well, like revenge. It's horrible. It really is.
Mm.
All right, did you have another? How much time you got, Sandy? You got, how about 5 more minutes? Can you spend?
Hey, I'm good. I'm good.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm
good. Little story here that I've been reading this morning about what the new Attorney General William Barr has been up to. Apparently, he's brought up a very kind of different environment. His main goal right now is try to restore credibility to the Justice Department. This story says he's certainly not an admirer of Peter Strzok or Lisa Page and understands what they have done to the credibility of the Justice Department. But there's something in this story that's kind of interesting. He does believe, as he said last Friday in backing the president's veto against the Congress saying that they aren't willing to go along with the executive order. But William Barr last week said it certainly is a crisis on the border. And he's also very upset. It says in this that he's going to advocate for restricting the ability of federal judges to issue nationwide injunctions halting administration policies. And I think maybe he's been listening to our program, but we have been advocating for this, that it is ridiculous that a federal judge in Hawaii would issue a ruling on the president's immigration policies and said, by the way, this applies to the whole country,
right?
Every state in the union. And William Barr is saying, enough is enough. I don't know constitutionally whether the attorney general can do much about that, but at least he's thinking about it and maybe exploring what he can do, Sandy.
Yeah, I think, anytime you have the attorney general weighing in on something like that, he is the chief law enforcement officer, but the Justice Department is the cousin, at least, to the court system, even though it's a different branch of government. And I don't know specifically what he can do, but he can do something, Fred. A lot of times there's regulations and rules that we don't even know about, you know?
Or the attorney general, in defending the president's policy, could go to another federal judge or to an appellate court, I would think, and challenge the application of this ruling and say to an appellate judge from a circuit court of appeals is what I'm talking about, and say, we want this order restricted to Hawaii, you know, because that's all they have the authority to do. And then maybe a circuit court judge or court panel, what have you, will say, absolutely, that's right. You can't do that. And then restrict it. To your point, Sandy, I'm not sure exactly we can do, but the attorney general would be the one who would defend presidential decisions against adverse rulings.
Yes. And President Trump, the Department of Justice, who is using their prosecutors to argue cases on behalf of the government, such as the emergency declaration and others, they could use one of these cases before the Supreme Court to request that the Supreme Court clarify when nationwide injunctions should be used and should not be used. And that possibly could narrow the scope and prevent. That would be huge if we could get these rogue courts to stop making these nationwide injunctions.
Right.
That would be a very, very big victory.
Yes, and the other thing, too, that we've forgotten, because we're, you know, you morph into different things through the generations, and we have morphed into something. Our three branches of government were supposed to be separate and equal. We have morphed into a place where we have given the court, the judicial branch, way too much power, way too much power. Mm-hmm. They were equal and not greater than the legislature and the executive. And so there used to be wars, you know, standoff wars against the powers. And that's on purpose. The founding fathers wanted that to happen. No, you went too far. That's our job. The Senate is actually hinting at that right now, even though I think it's misguided. They've finally found their backbone on something that's going to stop, you know, the president from using money on the border if they had their way. Because they say that, no, we, the legislative body, have the power of the purse, not the executive. Well, yeah, well, how about you maybe thought about that some time ago, because they've just let the courts make all the decisions. And we've got this mindset that, no, when the Supreme Court says something, that's it. Don't we have that? Roe versus Wade, as egregious as it was, it was like, oh, we have to obey the courts, the unelected body. No, we don't. Somewhere, somebody could have stepped in and stopped that, and they didn't. So we have an imbalance in our balance of powers.
Yeah. And go ahead.
Yeah, by the way, Brad Pascal is President Trump's 2020 campaign manager.
Okay.
That's good. Why he sounds familiar.
We'll hear that name a lot more as we start ramping up towards 2020. And we're not even really all that close to it, but man, that's all we talk about now is 2020. So it's going to be not quite a 2-year run, but anyway, it's getting very interesting with all the radical leftists lining up on the Democratic side. This is just going to be a wild and woolly race to 2020. So,
is it too early to ask Sandy to make a prediction of what Democrat is going to be on the top of the ticket?
Absolutely, it is not too early. Now, she may say, I don't have any idea, but
all right, got the tape recorder going here.
Sandy, who do you that's good. It's early, but if with that caveat, who do you think is going to be the front runner?
I think it might be Joe Biden.
Joe Biden?
Yeah, not that I want. Look, I wouldn't settle for any of them, so I need to be careful. But I think he will be the one that will appeal to the moderates. Ha, ha, ha. The few, the two that are there. And the uninformed Democrats who still think their party is the party of the working man, because he sounds like he is one even though he isn't.
Right.
He's got a terrible, terrible record, too. Things that people don't even talk about. I will never forget when he was vice president. Want to hear this little story?
Sure.
When he was vice president in the executive, not his own mansion, they have a beautiful place at the, observatory. Thank you. He had female Secret Service agents, many of them, and they begged that he would stop swimming in the nude, refused. He refused.
I can't believe you use the word nude on our show.
I know. I didn't even. Well, I just read it. I don't really know what it means. But seriously, think about that. Think about how perverse that is.
Oh my goodness, and unsanitary as well. But listen, he was routinely mocked for. I don't want to use the word groping, but he would come up behind women. Remember, there were several videos of him giving unwanted back rubs and shoulder rubs and stuff.
Yeah,
and
with her husband standing right next to him.
Yeah, what a creep. But okay, so.
Yeah, there's a lot of things about, honestly, I just will say, I don't know about Joe. I just told you the creepiest thing I know for a fact.
Right.
I think that there are tons of things behind the scenes.
He hasn't announced yet, though. He hasn't announced yet.
Well, he's teasing. He's teasing. He said a couple of weeks.
A couple of weeks, and he'll make his decision.
We can't wait.
Yeah, I can't wait to start reading stories about what you just talked about, mentioned about creepy Joe Biden. But,
they all have stuff. I always wondered about, honestly, Nancy Pelosi. Have you ever tried to research her? There's very little.
Pelosi?
I'm just saying there's a ton of, I'm telling you that with these leftists, there's a ton of stuff we don't know. Look what's coming about Beto O'Rourke right now. just unbelievable stuff coming out about him, and because nobody's protecting him.
Right.
But I'm just telling you, with people that are that far on the left, they got a lot of stuff, and a lot of it's buried and protected.
And, Sandy, they waited to reveal all the Beto O'Rourke stuff until after the Senate election.
Yes.
And they're getting it out now before the presidential election.
Well, and I'll tell you why they're getting it out now is because everybody right now has their favorite in the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. And so to protect your favorite, now you're going to release opposition research on some of the other candidates who might be a threat. So,
well, plus a lot of it, Ed, too, is you are reckoning from afar that he can't win.
Yeah.
And so you want to make sure that you knock him out early because you see the momentum he possibly has. You want the best person to win. It's not that you'd settle for Beto if he didn't have that bad stuff that might bury him.
Right.
So I think they're trying to take, I think, you know, there's a grand design. There always is with the left.
Yeah. All right. Well, Sandy, thank you for being with us. By the way, folks, the voice you've heard is probably pretty familiar to you. Sandy Rios, host of Sandy Rios in the Morning. You can listen to that program on American Family Radio Talk each weekday morning from 7:05 to 8 a.m. Central Time. Sandy, have a great day. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you. You guys, too. Talk to you soon.
Take care, right. Sandy.
Okay, bye.
Great stuff on Joe Biden. Listen, when I say this is going to be wild and woolly up to the 2020 election, I mean, just the people on the left, just the outlandish things that they say in defense of their radical ideas it's going to be entertaining and frightening at the same time because you're thinking these people are so clueless about how the real world works in terms of socialism, for example, et cetera, that these are people who could be elected president.
Oh, now, I know. You think of, you know, Beto O'Rourke. He raised over $6 million within 24 hours of announcing. Now, I suppose that was all orchestrated, you know, everybody knew, but it goes out there as a headline story, you know, over $6 million in the first hour. But, you know, speaking of Beto O'Rourke, he's got a bit of a messianic viewpoint about himself.
Really?
You heard what he said. He said, I was born.
Born for this.
I was born for this. Like, God created me for this, to be president of the United States?
Well, and let's make one thing clear. It doesn't matter. This is my opinion. It doesn't matter who the Democrats eventually nominate. 2020 is going to be extremely close.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, our country is split pretty much 50-50. And as we know, the Democratic Party starts with a pretty whopping good lead in terms of the Electoral College. Regardless, if they could, the Democrats could nominate Vladimir Lenin, and this election is going to be close.
Yeah.
It's going to come down to Florida and Virginia and Ohio and some of these other states that could go either way, and it's just going to be that close. Whoever the Democrats nominate could be president.
Mm-hmm. But the ramifications of who wins it's going to be incredible.
Yeah. Yes.
If a Democrat wins, I mean, we're not speculating here or being critical. This nation will go socialist.
It's coming from their own mouth.
That's what they want. Right. That's their platform.
Right. And if Democrats were to take both houses of Congress and the White House, this country would go socialist. And we might be looking in 5 years at Venezuela.
Right. Yeah.
You know, this is the kind of thing. We'll have open borders. My goodness, it'll be a complete disaster.
Overregulation, open borders, high taxes.
Strangle the economy. Yep. They'll cut the military. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're talking about a catastrophic change in this country from which we might never recover.
That's right.
So, anyway, how's that for being all sunshine and puppy dogs? Folks, we're going to take a 5-minute break for news. When we come back, we'll have more of what's happening here on Today's Issues.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.